Hey, it's Anna Sale, and I want to thank you for listening to Death, Sex, and Money, where I explore the big questions and hard choices that are often left out of polite conversation. You can hear new episodes ad-free every week on Amazon Music, where you can find Death, Sex, and Money and all of your Slate favorites without the ads.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
I mostly felt helpless because I felt like I didn't have the proximity to help with the day-to-day things of just making my parents' lives easier. And I didn't have the knowledge to offer any kind of solution. So I mostly just stood by and hoped that things weren't getting worse.
This is Death, Sex, and Money, the show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more. I'm Anna Sale. Hrishikesh Hirway hosts one of my favorite podcasts, Song Exploder.
You're listening to Song Exploder, where musicians take apart their songs and piece by piece tell the story of how they were made. I'm Hrishikesh Hirway.
Hrishikesh is a musician, and Song Exploder brings me into that creative process in a way I love, as it describes how a song is built track by track. He does a similar thing, but with turning pantry stables into a meal on the podcast Home Cooking, a show he launched with chef and co-host Samin Nosrat in the early days of the pandemic.
We're still home cooking.
You know, when you order French fries from a fast food place and you eat all the French fries.
Uh-huh.
And then you look in the bag and there's still some French fries down at the bottom of the bag.
And you're so excited.
That's what this episode is.
We're like the last two French fries and you're like, yeah.
On that show, Hrishikesh and Samin talked often about the food they grew up with. And for Hrishikesh, those touch points all came from his mom, Kanta.
If you picture the home that you grew up in and you flash on an image of your mother, what was she doing?
She was in the kitchen cooking and probably talking on the phone at the same time. There was, you know, a long cord. We got a longer cord for the phone so that she could walk around more easily, you know, without being constrained by the shorter length of the sort of spirally twisty phone cord.
The factory issued cord was not sufficient in your household. You had to get a special cord.
Yeah. You know, she could get to the fridge, she could get to the sink, she could get to the stove, all while keeping her conversation going.
Mm-hmm. And who did she talk on the phone to?
Oh, she had so many friends. And she would talk to all of them, you know, in a sort of constant rotation. The thing my mom's siblings always talked about and still talk about is that my mom was the storyteller of the family. And she used to sometimes go watch movies and then retell the movie's plot to her three younger siblings, and they would just be rapt. You know, they used to talk about how well she would describe everything that happened and that they felt like they were watching the movie themselves.
This is how Hrishikesh remembers his mother. But towards the end of her life, Kanta was no longer able to be the bubbly social center of her friends and family. She developed a degenerative neurological condition that limited her mobility and eventually her ability to communicate. She died in the fall of 2020, and Hrishikesh has been releasing new solo music this year about the grief of losing his mother when she was in her early 70s and in the years leading up to her death.
We've had to learn how to lose.
This is Hrishikesh's song, Home. I wanted to talk to Hrishikesh about losing his mother and also to learn more about her life before her illness. Kanta married Hrishikesh's father when she was 24, and they moved to the U.S. from India the same year. 2 years after that, they had Hrishikesh's sister, and he was born when Kanta was 31.
You know, my first few years of life, she didn't work, and then she started working at Sears nights, so my dad would be home. She would usually get a ride there. She didn't drive herself.
Uh-huh.
So she would get a ride to work, and then we would go pick her up, you know, around 9 o'clock or 9:30 or something like that. And I would already be in my pajamas and basically asleep in the car. But my dad and I would go uh-huh. pick her up.
And do you recall or have a sense, like, why did she take that job to work nights?
I think it was, you know, partly just so our family could have a little bit more money. But I know it was partly also because they offered an employee discount. And and she thought this is a good idea. You know, I could make some money, but then also we could get clothes a little bit cheaper. I think it also gave her a chance to just sort of do something else outside of the house. I think it might have been our next door neighbor, Mrs. Teal, who suggested that she look for a part-time job just to have something of her own. Mrs. Teal was a very influential figure in our life in general. And
Was Mrs. Teal the same age as your mom?
I don't know. She registered as an adult, so in my mind she was. But I don't know if they were the same age or if they were like 10 years apart in age. I have no idea.
Yeah, because there's one way to think of it, like, here's your mom, this person who loves to talk on the phone, who finally has her younger child in school, and she's got this friend who can give her a ride to the mall for this, like, evening job to have this totally, mm-hmm. you know, just like, yeah, another way of being in the world and being social, working retail.
Yeah.
While also getting a discount.
Yes.
When Hrishikesh was 13, he moved out of the house to go to New England boarding school about an hour away. And after college, he moved to the West Coast, where he still lives. As he became an adult, he became another person Kanta kept track of with regular check-ins and phone calls.
Yeah, we would talk on the phone. And then my mom eventually got Instant Messenger. She got on AOL Instant Messenger. So there was a while when she would IM me a lot. In the sort of early part of the 2000s, starting around like 2003, 2004, she left Massachusetts and went and lived with my dad, who had moved away for work. They'd been sort of separated just separated by distance, not like separated maritally or anything like that. Because my dad got a job in Nebraska and my mom wanted to stay in our home in, you know, our house in Massachusetts and sort of maintain some sense of that home. But eventually, I think my sister and I talked her into, you know, moving out to be closer to my dad. And when she did that, that's when she started getting really more internet savvy. And I was terrible. I would often leave them unanswered because I'd be too busy. You know, she'd just be asking me how I was. The question of the day was always like, what did you eat? What did you eat for lunch? What did you eat for dinner?
Uh-huh.
And I didn't have anything interesting. So I was like, I don't know. You know, I microwaved something. But it was just a way for her to feel like I was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think she missed me. She missed my sister a lot. And I don't think I really appreciated it at the time. I didn't appreciate it beyond sort of a sense of like, it was kind of nagging.
Yeah. It's like it was a message coming in when you were doing something else.
Yeah.
Then I met you.
When did your mother first notice that she was having symptoms of something that was new?
Well, it took us a while to figure out what was happening. First, it was her knees were giving her a lot of trouble, and she ended up having replacement surgery on both knees, and then eventually she needed a walker. And then we couldn't figure out what was happening. Because it wasn't just her knees, it wasn't just her joints, it was something about her mobility and her balance was off. And then the other strange symptom that started to come is she started to lose her voice. And it seemed like it was a side effect maybe of some medicine, but she was starting to take more medicine to kind of counteract some of the symptoms, and they were overlapping in ways that we couldn't quite understand. And so we couldn't understand what was a side effect and what was a symptom.
Was it sort of a family project to try to figure out what was going on?
Yeah. My dad, of course, was with her every day. At this point, they had moved to the suburbs of Chicago. My mom had gotten my dad a new job. So she was like, I don't want to live in Nebraska.
Explain why you say it that way.
Well, my dad was living in a very, very, very small town in Nebraska, a population of 2,000 or so. It was mostly farmland. And my mom didn't know anybody there. She was, you know, I think quite disconnected. And so she got there, and within months, as part of her kind of internet training, she learned about monster.com, and she would just go on there and look for jobs for my dad, who's a food scientist. And she found him, she found a job, in Chicago, told him about it and pushed him to apply, and he got it, and then they moved. She was in Nebraska for less than a year. After my dad had been there for, you know, 8 years or something.
This won't do. We're going to monster.com. Okay.
Yeah.
So they moved to Chicago together. So you were explaining your father was there with her, and he's seeing this up close.
Yeah. So he was there, you know, taking her to local doctors there. But eventually, you know, it started to become more and more noticeable. In 2011, when I got married, you know, a really strange thing happened where my mom's voice had given out in a way where she couldn't really be a part of the wedding in a way that felt right to me. You know, this really social person was somehow missing from that important day. I mean, she was there and she enjoyed it. And I have pictures of her smiling and laughing, but she couldn't say anything. She didn't make a speech or really even talk to people so much because her voice was so reduced physically that it took a lot of effort for her to speak, and it took a lot of effort to hear her, frankly. And I don't think I realized like how much worse it would get from there.
You said you lost your voice for a while, kept to yourself. The only words you said were a wish to be someone else.
Over the next 8 years, Hrishikesh and his family took Kantha to different doctors as they eliminated causes for her various symptoms. And then finally, in 2019, they figured it out. What was the diagnosis you received in 2019?
It was PSP, which stands for progressive supranuclear palsy, which is a pretty rare degenerative neurological condition. But once we got that diagnosis and sort of, I remember reading the symptoms, it made so much sense.
So by the time your family had this name for what was happening in your mom's body, was it something that you could talk with her about?
No, I didn't really talk about it with my mom ever. There was something just so sad about it and inevitable about it that I didn't see really what the point would be to discuss it with her. I tended to try and just, I mean, as I did for most of my life, especially, you know, once I got to be a teenager or a little bit older, I just, my relationship with my mom basically became just me trying to make her laugh all the time. Mm-hmm. I would just tell her just terrible jokes to make her get, you know, laugh really hard and try and hit me. That was the, you know, the best reaction that I could get from her is like a cackle and like her reaching out to try and like slap my arm or something. And so that's sort of what I limited my interactions with her to stuff like that. Or, you know, when it would be her birthday or something, I would ask her, you know, what she would want. Just things that I could try and do to try and make things, just find ways to give her any kind of joy or something. I don't know. I don't know if she was depressed. I don't know how she felt about things because she really wasn't able to articulate it. And I think maybe one of the saddest things about PSP for me was this, in the, you know, in the reading that I was doing, one of the symptoms was that it reduces people's ability to feel pleasure. Hmm. And of all the things, you know, like her inability to move around the way that she used to be able to, her inability to talk to me the way that she used to, that idea that she wasn't able to just have pleasure in things the way that she used to really broke my heart. All summer on, your fire escape. Did you already know, darling, the mess I made?
Coming up, how Hrishikesh's mom's decline and death in 2020 transformed his whole family.
After my mom passed away, we just kind of, despite how much support we got from our friends and the people who loved my mom, it just felt a little bit like we retreated a bit away from everyone else, and we kind of did that together as a family.
Let me tell you a good story. It was late on a Sunday afternoon, and my family and I had been away and rolled into the driveway, and everyone was worn out from traveling and getting hangry. But waiting for us was a solution. A Hungry Root box filled with healthy, grabbable snacks and a few different dinner meals to choose from. We tore into this thing like a pack of wild animals and ate all the snacks. But they were healthy, whole ingredients, fresh produce. And then we were set for dinner a few hours later, which only took about 15 minutes to prep and cook and get on the table. I was so grateful to my past self for doing my current self this solid by ordering this box. And it was easy. I took a short quiz to tell Hungry Root what kinds of meat my family eats, the sorts of flavors we like, any dietary restrictions we have, or just things we're trying to avoid, and when I wanted the box to be delivered. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Death, Sex, and Money listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/DSM to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/DSM. And don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen. And her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate.
Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home. And you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM Plus to get access wherever you listen. Thanks.
This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. It took years for Hrishikesh Hirway's family to get a diagnosis for the constellation of symptoms that were making it difficult for his mother to move around and communicate. But even after that, they didn't know what would happen next. And so, like many of us, when we face uncertainty, Hrishikesh turned to the internet.
I mean, when you read it on a website, it's clinical. But I remember reading like something like PSP in and of itself is not fatal. However, most people do die from secondary effects because of PSP. Because it affects your balance, people might fall or it also affects sort of involuntary motor function as well. And so people might have trouble swallowing and they might choke on something and die. Suddenly everything was a minefield and it felt like there's just no way to know what could happen. I really tried to not talk to her about her condition. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was irresponsible of me, but she and my dad spent so much time going to doctors, talking to specialists or whatever. It just felt like I didn't need to be adding to the tonnage of information that they were getting.
As you're taking in this information about how your family is changing and in ways that you can't do anything about, did you explore making music about it?
Not intentionally, but I did write a song in 2018 that I realized was about my mom as much as it was the sort of actual person who inspired it, which was Sandra Day O'Connor.
Skyline slowly. Sandra Day O'Connor, the former U.S. Supreme Court Justice. The song is called Memory Palace.
Sandra Day O'Connor had written in October of that year, she'd written this letter letting people know that she had Alzheimer's. And that she was retreating from public life.
But love, the light around that picture's going dim. So before the sweetest memories cave in, I'm not giving up, just giving in. Yeah, I'm leaving.
I found it so moving. I was thinking about the idea of sort of recognizing your body changing as it was happening and sort of making a decision. And so there was a line that I wrote that was, I've been changing, I know you can tell. My hands shake, your heart aches. And, hands shaking is not really something that I think necessarily Sandra Day O'Connor was experiencing, but it was something that I thought about with my mom. And those stories started to overlap for me in that song.
Like, I remember when that news story happened. I remember the letter. What I remember about it was it was an announcement of as you say, like, her retreating from public life and wanting to say why, while she felt confident that she could still be the one narrating it. It was sort of, I want to tell you why, if you're wondering.
Yes, right.
And so that line, I've been changing, I know you can tell, is both, here's what I'm noticing about I'm changing, and also I want to acknowledge that I know you have noticed, and maybe we haven't said it out loud yet because it's painful.
Yeah. I think one thing that struck me about it was that she had an agency about it that I admired and also kind of felt sad about, that my mom didn't get to have something like that. In some ways, I was almost jealous of the idea that she could so eloquently express this is what's happening to her, and this is a decision that she's going to make because of that. It felt like we were pretty helpless and didn't get to make decisions about anything. And my mom certainly didn't get the chance to express anything as eloquently as she once could.
When she was declining at the very end of her life, was it an end that you saw coming?
It was one of those secondary reasons. As far as we can tell, she had a heart attack. And she went really fast. She was sort of as close to her normal self as she was kind of 1 minute, and then she was gone the next.
After Kantha died, Hrishikesh told me he had a dream about his mother. It started with a familiar scene. She was asking for a glass of water from bed. He put it on the nightstand for her and left, not wanting to disturb her.
And then I went outside of the house and I stood out there and I started to leave. And then I turned around and I started to run back. And my mom had come out of the room, come out of the house, and she sat down on these stairs. And we had a very kind of frank conversation, a tender one, but frank and we told each other that we missed each other.
Oh.
And there was some, you know, acknowledgement in that moment that she was gone and she knew it and I knew it. I can't
see where you are. This is the song called Between There and Here that he wrote after that dream with Yo-Yo Ma on cello. TV, you'd fall asleep too.
I remember when I played the song the first time, it felt really nice. I think it felt a little bit like I was doing some kind of some honor to her memory or something like that. One thing is that my mom really liked it when I sang. And she liked my songs. I remember, you know, for a while, I took a break from music. And as much as my parents, you know, were as Indian immigrants, were sort of not thrilled about the idea of me trying to be a musician full time, my mom did always like my songs, and she would sometimes sing them herself. And, you know, or after I'd taken a long break from music, she would ask me, she was like, when are you going to sing again?
Was she well in your dream?
She was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was the way that I remember her, in the kind of like platonic ideal version of my mom, talking and moving around and as sharp and as warm as ever.
Mm-hmm. Long phone cord era mother.
Yeah. That era of my mom sort of extends from all the way from when I was six up until, you know, when I was 30. She was the same person.
I'm curious, you said that your mother loved to hear you sing. Was there a particular song of yours that she liked your voice in?
Yeah, there was a song that I wrote called In the Time We've Got. That came out on a record in 2007. It's our job to live as well as we can in the time we've got. Was written in the note I found when I woke. And I remember hearing her sing that.
She sang it. Uh-huh.
She had a great voice. And I remember I tried to get her to sing on the track with me.
Oh, and she wouldn't.
No, she was willing to. I thought, you know, it took some convincing. But I thought, oh, wouldn't this be nice, that way to like capture this moment she's singing along with the song. This could be great. I can remember being in the living room with her and putting, you know, the headphones on. I think it was the first time I'd ever seen my mom wearing headphones. And we couldn't do it. She, even though she was a great singer and she would sing all the time, the process of actually sort of recording her voice in a particular rhythm and a particular key, you know, and a particular cadence that matched what I was singing and went along with the track, she couldn't do it. And we ended up just saying, okay, well, we tried. Didn't happen.
Yeah, the pitfalls of trying to collaborate with family.
Yeah.
Doesn't always work.
Yeah.
When they weren't trying to record together, and before she got sick, Hrishikesh remembers his mom singing as the opposite of labored, more an easy, constant comfort. He told me that earlier this year, when the Indian singer Lata Mangeshkar died at the age of 92, memories of that came flooding back.
When I used to hear my mom sing, she would sing Indian songs for the most part, and she would sing things from movies that she had seen and songs from before I was born. And Lata Mangeshkar, being the most famous singer, was just a huge presence. She was a huge part of that. My mom would sing her songs all the time. And Lata Mangeshkar is also Marathi, like my family is. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she was incredible. She at one point held the Guinness Book of World Records for the most songs ever recorded by a person. She's recorded over 25,000 songs. But my connection to her was through my mom.
Uh-huh.
And when I saw the news that she passed away, it struck me really, really hard. I felt real grief because I went back and I started listening to some of her songs, my favorite songs of hers, which were, I only know because they were also my mom's favorite songs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so there's a song that Lata Mangeshkar sang from a film that is a lullaby. And my mom, I remember, sang it to me, and I would ask her to sing it to me as a lullaby when I was a kid, a song that, you know, a song from a movie that came out in like 1980.
Mm. What's the name of the lullaby?
Oh, the song is called, let me get it right. It's in Hindi, and I don't speak Hindi very well, or at all, really. After my mom passed away, I remember I was trying to find this song so I could listen to it, and I didn't know the name of it. The song is called Halke Halke Aayi Chalke, but I thought it was called Chupke Chupke, which are other lyrics that are in the song. And I was like, I'm searching everywhere for Chupke Chupke. It's not, I can't find it. And it turns out I had the title wrong.
I won't ask you to sing the words, but would you hum a little bit of it?
I could play it for you, but do you want me to actually, you want my voice doing it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
out of nervousness, is it okay if you won't hear it in my mic, but can I play a little bit of the music so I can
sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Halke, halke, aayi chalke, boli nandiya rani.
I can't do the stuff that she does. Her voice is amazing.
I love that.
Tu so chari.
Goes on like that.
Yeah.
Oh, that probably sounded terrible.
No, it sounds really beautiful. And it also, I feel like it's justice because we were talking about your mother not quite getting into the register that you wanted her to get into.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. My mom would be so happy about that you just made me sing that song.
That's Hrishikesh Shirway.
If you use that, will you put the music under it so I'm not just bare naked, terrible?
As one one podcast thank producer to another. We'll I'm looking out. I'm looking out.
That is not my key.
You can find his music on Spotify, including his newest song, which you heard in this episode, called Still Dreaming. We have a link to it in our show notes, as well as to the podcasts Home Cooking and Song Exploder. There's also a spinoff Netflix series called Song Exploder, which is fantastic. Don't sleep on the R.E.M. and Alicia Keys episodes. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC Studios in New York. This episode was produced by me, and the rest of the team is Andrew Dunn, Zoe Azoulay, Afi Yellowduke, Liliana Maria Percy Ruiz, and Lindsay Foster Thomas. Our intern is Lily Clark. The Reverend John Delore and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. Thanks to Christine Kemp from Amherst, New York, for being a member of Death, Sex, and Money and supporting us with a monthly donation. Join Christine and support what we do here by going to deathsexmoney.org/donate. I'm on Instagram at Anna Sailpix, that's P-I-C-S, and the show is at Death Sex Money on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And I have one more very important thing to tell you. Next month, the San Francisco-based ice cream shop, Salt and Straw, is releasing a new limited edition flavor inspired by Kantha Hirway's mango pie recipe. It's called Mom's Mango Pie, and they'll ship it anywhere in the U.S. Yum. I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.